You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, March 22nd, 2024. It's yours truly, Grandpa Dan, wrapping up your work week here at RadioAlbion.com. I'm glad you have the chance to listen to this show, and I hope you have the weekend off. If not, I hope maybe you at least can stick this podcast in your ear, put the earbuds in. Might make having to work on a Saturday or Sunday go a little bit better. I'm continuing to try to keep the lighthearted aspect. I don't know how well that's working, but I am trying to keep the, I'm trying to revive the lighthearted aspect of the Friday Daily Nationalist as best as I can. And of course, I always continue to remind everybody that we do have our Sven Longshank support links here on the Daily Nationalist. Always encourage you to drop him an email. Really recommend the email service. Really good. Email, drop him a postcard, drop him a note. Whether you hear back from him or not, I can tell you it is very much appreciated. He does appreciate it a whole lot. I do remain in somewhat regular contact with Sven. And anytime I've got any updates to how he's doing, I will, of course, be sure and pass those along. What is the Friday Daily Nationalist? And I had a news story I was going to do, and I kind of last minute, like I've got everything pulled up, the mic sitting in front of me, ready to go. And last minute, I decided, no, I'm going to scrap that. I may do it Monday, may not, who knows. But I thought, but there wasn't any way. I was looking at this story, and I'm like, I can't really do anything lighthearted with this story. And I just, I think the last two Friday installments of this show, I managed to keep it somewhat lighthearted. And I hate to toss that out the window so quickly. So, no, I'm going to try to keep it lighthearted. And I actually, my own selfish benefit, I kind of enjoy just the lighthearted discussion. I'm not going to do a news article, but I'm just going to try to have a discussion, maybe something you can chuckle at and get a little laugh at. You know, one of the advantages, I'm a Gen Xer. So, you know, once in a while I get accused of being a boomer, but I'm a Gen Xer, and I'll be the first to admit I'm a Gen Xer by barely. You know, I think by 2 years, I made it into Gen X by like 2 years, but I take pride in my Gen Xism. I don't know if that's something to take pride in or not. We Gen X's always have, you know, every generation that gets labeled has like this thing, you know, assigned to them. And of course, Gen Xers, we have this identity assigned to us, like basically, you know, the world's burning and we just don't care. Just let it burn. And see, unlike the boomers, I don't get offended at that because I can laugh because in a lot of ways that is. That's kind of true. Just let it burn. Gen Xers, we've got like a unique perspective of the world. Is it because we got in on the tail end? When we got in on the tail end of things being somewhat relatively kind of sort of normal, you know? And I thought today I'm going to talk a little bit about how things have changed, how I've seen things change over the course of my life. And, you know, as Gen Xers, we've seen things, we got in the tail of things being normal, kind of a hope when we were young. We still had this hope that, you know, our lives could be better and more prosperous than generations to come. And I think this really sets us apart from, say, the baby boomers. The baby boomers got to enjoy the bulk of their life under this relative normalcy, this relative sense of prosperity. And it's like, where the baby boomers have this thing of they just want their share of it to keep going on, you know, and it, no matter what it costs anybody else. And again, that's just kind of a generational thing. Like I say, Gen Xers, we're just like, we see it. We've seen how everything's gone downhill. Let it burn. We don't care. And I chuckle at that. It's not, of course, 100% accurate. It's a generalization. But it's a funny generalization because it's kind of more or less true. Because Gen Xers were kind of in between, we're more sympathetic, I think, by and large, to the younger generations than the boomers are. The boomers, see, they're removed from that because they got us. We're like the DMZ. Gen Xers are the DMZ. We're the neutral zone between boomers and millennials, zoomers, whatever the hell is going to be labeled after that. I don't know. We're the DMZ. We're that line that separates them. And so you see, we have that separation. And so the boomers are over here, you know, doing their whole thing of, well, I just don't understand why these younger generations don't give them a firm handshake, pull themselves up by the bootstraps and do what I did. It's like this disconnect. But see, as Xers, we're in that DMZ. See, we understand because we saw the transition. Baby boomers have basically been isolated from the transition. And if they see it, they just don't acknowledge it. They don't want to acknowledge it. But we Gen Xers, we are the transition. We are the transition. So I think we're a little more understanding. A little more understanding. That's why you see that hostility. You know, you had this hostility between the generations. And there's always more hostility from the younger generations directed towards the baby boomers versus the Gen Xers. Because we're the transition. We understand. Very sympathetic. I am. I'm sympathetic. I see people and, you know, and they'll be critical of these younger generations. And you know, I get it. I get why the younger generations are so blackpilled because they have every good reason to. I've seen the transition. I was thinking about some of the various things, and I just jotted a few days. Like I said, it was right before recording that I decided to go off on this tangent, this whole different direction. And so I just jotted some stuff down that I've seen change in no particular order. That I've seen change over my lifetime. And it's amazing when you actually start thinking about it, because you go through your day-to-day life and you don't notice these changes because they just kind of, I don't know, gradually happen. You know, they happen over time. You're busy. You don't really notice them. But it's funny to jot down and really look back and look at the way things have changed. I think one of the really telling things, one of the most stark things that has changed over the years is the way that people view government and authority, you know? And this is funny because you would think that as things have gotten worse, you know, as they apply, like especially for the younger generations, as things have gotten worse and people, especially the younger generations, have so little to no hope of ever getting anywhere in life, you would think, logically speaking, you would think that these people would have more of a disdain for government and authority. Instead, you see the opposite, you know, where like in younger generations, you know, like when I was young, we had a relative, compared to today, we had a hopeful future and a lot more relative prosperity than what younger people have. And we had much more of a skeptical and even mocking attitude towards government and authority. This is really highlighted. One thing I think highlights this is like a way is portrayed, government authority and such is portrayed in the media, TV shows, and the movies. Like I always say, how did we get, you know, how do we go from being a society that loved movies like Smokey and the Bandit and Convoy, TV shows like The Dukes of Hazzard, where the cops are like bumbling idiots, you know, or corrupt and just trying to throw their weight around and oppress the working man, you know, oppress the people with their silly, stupid laws, to everything now is reflected as this hero, you know, the government authorities, the police are always the heroes. I'll sit there and watch. The only TV I watch is the local news in the morning. And I keep it on mute just until the weather report comes on, the weather forecast. And they run their commercials, you know, be sure and tune in tonight. On CBS tonight, the FBI's, because there's more than one. When did there become more than one? The FBI's, our heroic forces of diversity, will be conquering the evil bad guys, will be white. They will be white guys. You could 100% be guaranteed they will be white guys. And then they have this, the FBI International. They're even more heroic because they go around and spread the democracy to other countries because they are bumbling idiots. They can't do it. They can't do it on their own. It's an amazing thing to me, though, that people have absorbed that, you know, and they worship this authority. Where back in the day, we watched the bandit, you know, make fools of the cops. The cops, he was going at high speeds. He was traveling in his old Trans Am, you know, so they could get that beer. They're trying to truck that beer to Georgia. They're going in the Trans Am and the cops are trying to chase him and he's going and ramping over creeks and the cops can't do it and they crash and all the police cars pile up and they look like fools and their hats are on crooked and everybody laughs. It was more of a fun time. Now, everybody bows and worships the authority. Everybody sit there and go, oh my gosh, he's putting so many people in danger. That's horrible. And he said, it's an amazing thing too, because a lot of those voices are like baby boomers or even maybe some people from my own generation, the older people that when they were young, they loved those shows and they'd sit there and say, yeah, man, the cops, you know, they look stupid, they're corrupt, they're bumbling idiots. This is a funny show. It's a good. And now that these people have gotten older, they're the hand wavers, you know, the finger waggers. You don't you go over the speed limit. Put your seatbelt on. My gosh, safety. Can you imagine you're driving around while you're 5 miles over the speed limit? What if you crash into a car full of kids and slaughter everybody with your high speed antics? The very same people that when they were young, they enjoyed these movies. My gosh, when I was young, you know, drinking and driving was not a terminal offense. You know, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't even considered that big a deal. Now, I'm not saying, you know, it's good to be driving around drunk, but there was this whole different perspective. The very same people that when they were young, they drove around many a time, and don't let them tell you they didn't, because they'll lie to you, you know, be like, I didn't do that. Yeah, you did. They were driving around with a beer in the car, doing their thing. And now that they're older, they're finger waggers. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. My gosh. These people are smoking. How dare you smoke? It's like as they've gotten older, they became Puritans. They forget what all they did when they were young. It was good for them, not so much for you. We went from those kind of shows. Now everything, it's always the government agencies, the government workers, why they're heroes. They're heroes just trying to protect us from all the evil dangers that are out there, the evil dangers that are lurking. Speaking of various forms, you know, of entertainment that have changed over the years, you know, the media, and I mean like the media, the news media. And you know, back then, we knew the media was liberal. People talked about the liberal media. But they also had a sense that even though these reporters were liberal, like they would still report the truth. You know, people had this sense that like if a reporter got a hold of a story where the government was doing some sort of shady shit, whether this perception was right or wrong, mind you, that if the government was doing something shady, that they would break the story. This gave people a certain sense of, you know, of confidence, like you had the media, like you had the press, and they were doing their job. They might be liberal, but like if the government was doing something really shady that they shouldn't be doing, they'd report on it. I realize looking back, you can look into it, and actually the government was, of course, doing shady stuff, and the media did not report on it, but we at least, it's the perception we had. You know, the brave reporter that was out there on the beat, it's got a source. Some government documentation. They're up to shady stuff. They're experimenting on people. They're doing some sort of something that they shouldn't be doing. They're going to get called to account. Nobody sees, nobody views that like that. Nobody. I always say we went from having reporters to having journalists. It is just a definition term that I like to use. We went from reporters to journalists. Reporters now do nothing but run interference for the government. They attack people who disagree with the government. These people sit around. There's no reporter out on the beat, you know, hitting the streets, hitting up his sources to find out what the government's up to shine the light of truth. Now they sit in the office and check their email, and they just simply turn around and report, you know, government press releases. They just report government press releases verbatim. These people are the ones, like, you know, you have this whole thing with AI. You know, when people talk about AI, AI is going to replace everybody's job. I laugh at that shit. I do. Everybody like, oh, your job's going to get replaced by AI. AI is going to replace your job. And they say, oh, you should be scared of this. We're supposed to be scared of everything. You notice that? You notice? We were growing up, when I was young, we were growing up, of course, we had the whole Cold War thing going on. And they told us, you know, one wrong move and we could all be vaporized to nuclear Armageddon. Now, obviously, I'm too young to have gone through the whole thing where they did the drills, you know, getting under the desks like that was going to protect you from a nuclear blast. But, you know, we lived under that whole shroud that if a nuclear war broke out, you know, we would all be instantly annihilated, all life on Earth. Obviously, that was an exaggeration. But we lived under that. And yet we weren't living in fear. We went about our lives. We were riding around on back roads, drinking beer, even though we were 16 years old. It wasn't the end of the world. The world did not end. People had fun. People laughed. Now, everybody's afraid of everything. You know, there's a boogeyman and you're just going to die at any minute. People, when everybody gets so afraid of everything? My gosh, do you know what could happen? What could happen if you do that? Do you know what could happen? That's how they sold the whole pandemic nonsense. You could die. You could die at any minute. Everybody's afraid of everything. It's crazy. You know, it's like those old memes, you know, where they show the old pictures like kids. Oh my gosh, they're bicycling with no helmets on, making improvised ramps and ramping their skateboards and their bikes off of it. And they're not even wearing helmets. I got afraid of everything. We were up. We had this whole thing. We could be wiped out in nuclear Armageddon. And yet we didn't really think about it. It went on. And we didn't. We didn't get wiped out in nuclear Armageddon. Now everybody's afraid of everything. Can't bicycle without a helmet on. You can't do this. You can't do that. Because what if? What if? These finger waggers. They're always dealing in the what ifs, aren't they? You know? What if? What if you were driving 5 miles over the speed limit and you crashed into somebody and killed everybody and you would have to live with that? And it's always a hypothetical. They can't really point to something, you know? It's what if. Americans like to think, you know, they're like, they're these brave individualists, you know. We're Americans. We're the descendants of the pioneers that set out and settled the West. Now put your bicycle helmet on and your 5 layers of padding in case you fall off. How do you even claim to be the descendants of these people when you're afraid of, like, literally everything? Anyway, I kind of got off on tangent. Now, I was talking about being afraid of AI. You know, they want you to be afraid of AI. I watch them and they do these spook things. And most of that stuff is geared towards people that have no idea how AI even works. Now, I'm not up on computer stuff very much. But I mean, I do understand the basics and I do understand, you know, the concept of AI and what it actually does. But they build up this Hollywood thing, you know? This Hollywood version of what AI is and what AI does. Anyway, they come out and they say, you're going to get your job. Everybody's job is going to be replaced by AI. No. No, they're not. How's AI going to fix your car? It's not. Somebody's going to get in there and bust their knuckles turning wrenches, fixing your damn car. AI ain't going to pick up your trash. AI ain't going to replace the faucet on your sink. Now, the people whose jobs are going to be replaced by AI are what? Journalists. Back to that. See, I got off on a tangent there. But back, circling back to journalists, the media. Since there are no longer reporters that are out reporting, looking for scoop, out on the beat, hitting up their sources, seeing what the government's up to, see what kind of corruption they can uncover. Since now they're journalists and they sit in their office and check emails, and when they get a government press release, they just sit around and kind of reword the press release a little bit, put it out there and pretend it's a news story. Or my personal favorite, when they put up Twitter posts, they like have an opening paragraph. Everybody says this, and then they put a bunch of Twitter posts up. maybe a concluding paragraph at the bottom. They're definitely getting replaced by AI. If all you're doing is reporting on government press release, yeah, AI is perfect for that. These people are going to get replaced by AI because all they're doing is rewording. You know, if you just handed AI, you feed AI a government press release and say, write a story supporting this government press release, and it'll spit it right out. It'll probably do a better job than these journalists. But it is silly. It's silly when they say everybody's job going to get replaced by AI. Not if it requires actually doing something. No, it's not. If it involves sitting there and regurgitating a press release from the government, yeah, your shit's going to get replaced by AI. Absolutely. Good. I don't care. I think it's funny. These people look down their nose, you know. That's one of the things, you know, that's so grating about quote-unquote journalists. They think they're so much better than everybody else, you know. You just know they do. They think that they're so much more important. They're so much more. I've got a journalism degree. Very important. And just to know that they're going to be replaced by a computer because they don't really actually even contribute anything. But if you do something, if you actually know how to accomplish things, then yeah, that's not going to be replaced by AI. AI isn't going to plant the fields. AI ain't going to run the cattle. AI isn't going to do any of those things. It can't do any of those things. But it can damn sure rewrite a government press release as a quote-unquote news story. So many of these people, they're just, you know, they just feed off the system, you know. They're just parasites. Remember when Elon Musk bought Twitter and he laid off, he's like shit canned like 70% of the employees, and all the employees that got fired were like, oh, this will be the end. This thing, in two weeks, Twitter will go down because we're so important, and like no change. So 70% of the workforce was basically doing made up jobs. They were just doing made up jobs. That's how all these journalists are. They're just doing a made up job. Anybody could sit there and rewrite government press releases. You won't pay me $100,000 a year. I can sit here and check my email and rewrite a quick article. Probably take me 10 minutes. Copy, paste the government press release, change a few words, and say, the government sources say this. A government source was the department, you know, the FBI, whoever emailed you and said, hey, here's the story we are going with today. I don't know. Well, one of the things, too, that's really changed, of course, is really become obvious now, and nobody can really deny it, except for journalists who are writing for the government. And that's things like the cost of living. And I'm going to fold in hope with all of that. The cost of living. Well, young people today, they can't afford. I talk to young people, say, I get out. Believe it or not, I talk to regular people on a regular basis. I know how people out here, people of all ages. And you talk to younger people, And you find out what things like rent costs now. Well, it's insane. It's insane. People just sitting there doing, you know, you have the, I was talking about the generational differences, and, you know, the boomers will be like, oh, well, I was your age. I was working for 50 cents an hour. You're making $13 an hour and you're bitching? Let me tell you something. Oh, yeah, you weren't paying $1,600 a month for rent either. I remember when I was right out of high school, I had just a regular old shitty job that anybody could walk in with a high school diploma and get. Regular old shitty job. And like right out of the bat, right out of high school, I could rent a house. And I did. I rented a house. Cost me like $250. It was a shitty house. Yeah, but it was a house. Cost me like $250 a month. Rent this house. $250 a month. And that did not put me in financial straits. I rented this out. Of course, I was renting the house from an old lady that was using it as, you know, supplemental income for her retirement. I wasn't renting it from BlackRock. But to me, going out and renting a house, you know, go out and buy a house. You want a house? Go save up some money. Go buy a house. It wasn't no big deal. A lot of young people back then didn't save up money to buy a house because they didn't know where they wanted to live yet. They had to figure all that out. It wasn't because there's no hope. As the DMZ generation, Gen X, as being as we're the DMZ generation, see, we see that transition. We see it. The boomers don't see it. They don't comprehend it. We're the ones, the transitionals. We sit here and say, when I was young, you could rent a house. It was no big deal. But then we can also look at the young generations today and say, you're paying how much to rent a shitty one-bedroom apartment? $13 an hour? How is that happening? And they got no hope. You know, people have no hope. These younger people especially, they got no hope. Where are they going to go? You know, they can't hope to start a family. They can't hope to, you know, get themselves established and have a good, steady income that they can make a living on. They don't have that. They don't have that. It's been taken away from them by this corrupt system. Oh, and that's the reality of it. There's so much despondency. And they talk about things like, you know, the opioid epidemic and this and that. And a lot of that, I believe, is reflective of the fact that people don't have any hope now. You know, they don't have any hope that they're going to, if they work hard and do a good job, they can move up in a company and really get themselves established and buy a home and have a wife and family and kids and a car or two that are decent and make a better life. They don't have that hope. They can't even afford a shitty one-bedroom apartment, much less any of those other things. And that's just the reality. They don't have any hope. But yet, you look at this system, what do they offer instead? Drugs, you know? Oh, yes, but you have so much more. Oh, really? What? Well, look, you can indulge in every kind of sexual degeneracy you want to. Sure, you can't have a wife and family, but look, you can flip open your computer. You have access to all the free porn you want. You can watch your favorite porn star get railed on by black men in every position imaginable. And you can sit there and stare at that and masturbate and pretend like you're somehow a part of it. You see, just escape from it. Just escape and do these things. Take some fentanyl and the world goes away. And now you have places like Canada. They're even throwing in, well, if you're really that unhappy, you can kill yourself and we'll help you. Look, we've got this cool little pod. Just lay down in it. We'll shut the lid. You'll go to sleep and all your worries will go away. You can just die. This is what they offer. And this is the way it always goes. You know, I remember when I was young, the whole Dr. Kevorkian, Dr. Death, Dr. Kevorkian. Dr. Kevorkian, you know, he invented this assisted suicide thing, you know, and they always sell this crap, as you know, for terminally ill people. Terminally ill people should have medical assisted suicide. That's how it started in Canada. Terminally ill people. Why, if you're just got a month to live and you're in agony from cancer, why shouldn't you be put out of your misery? Why do people just oppose this and just want to see someone suffer? Because people that oppose this understand it never stops there. They went in Canada, they went from, if you're terminally ill and there's no hope to live, you know, and you're suffering, we'll help put you out of your misery. And of course, that's already translated now into, you're depressed, you have no hope for a better life. We'll help you into your misery. Get in the pod. Just get in the pod. As the DMZ generation, we've seen this transition. We were there when they were talking about Dr. Kevorkian and the controversy around should medical assisted suicide for the terminally ill to, if you're depressed, just go on and kill yourself. We saw that transition. We saw it. We can understand. We sit there and tell the boomers, look, you don't understand. We sit there and tell the young people, life wasn't always this bad, wasn't always this hopeless. If you're born into this sort of thing, you don't realize that it was taken from you because it was taken from you before you ever got it. It's kind of like the way the government, you know, withholds your taxes. You don't miss it because, you know, people always get excited every year. You know, it's that time. It's tax season here in the U.S. And people get all excited talking about, oh, I'm going to get this refund. I'm going to, like, the government's gifting them money. The government takes the money from you. Even if you get a big chunk of it back. They took it from you, used it interest-free all year, and then give you a piece of it back, and you're sitting there gobbling it up like they're doing you a favor. See, with the DMZ generation, we understand. We see these things. But if you're born into it, if you're born into this hopelessness, you don't realize it was taken from you. It's like that. You realize that was your money all along. They just stole it from you and gave you a little piece of it back and said, you appreciate it. You know, when you're born into it, you don't understand it was taken from you. And it was. I mean, sure, if you're born into it, you don't know any different, but it was still taken from you because generations such as my own, when we were younger, we had it. The boomers had it. As the transitional DMZ generation, Gen X, Gen X, we can tell you we had it and now we've seen it go away. We've seen the trend. We've lived through that transition. So the younger generations that don't know any different, they're just born into it. We can tell you this was taken from you. You don't know it was taken from you because it was taken from you maybe perhaps before you were even born, but it was taken from you. Every generation owes it to the next generation, to the hope of a better life. That's the normal way a society is supposed to function, a normal functioning society. Every generation should always hope, you know? People is a natural thing. People are always supposed to hope that their kids and their grandkids will do better than they did, will have a happier life than they did. That's how normal human beings function in the world. I'm telling you, you don't have that now. And some of that failure falls on the older generations. You know, we saw those things come and go, and, you know, we understand how the system works now that the people don't really have a say in it. But still, it's a failure. It's a failure because we can't offer you a better life. We can't offer the hope of a better future. We just had to own it, you know? I mean, it is what it is. But it was taken. It was taken. People don't have that now. And they are owed that. Really are. They're owed that. Previous generations are supposed to leave the next generation, you know, with a better hope for the future than they had. That's what would be called progress. Actual progress. What they call progress now is regress. Things continually get worse and they keep telling us, but we're making all of this progress. And you're like, well, how are we making progress? People, you know, young people have no hope for the future. People are just checking out on life. How is this progress? Oh, yes, but look, you can do whatever sort of sexual degeneracy you want and it'll be celebrated and accepted. See, it's totally worth the trade-off. I said going into the show, I was trying to make it more lighthearted and that didn't work out very well. That failed. That would be the lighthearted thing. You can laugh about the failed attempt I made at having a lighthearted Friday show. It didn't work out. Didn't work out very well. What's normal now is not going to be normal in the future. Generations before, the boomers, Gen Xers, when we were younger, we had a better life and it didn't stay that way. Things got worse. And now if you're a younger person, and you're living in just total clown world, you're born into clown world, and things are bad. You know, when I see people and they're black-pilled, and I understand, you got good reason to be. And sit here and say, oh, you got no reason, why are you down? No, I understand. I do, I understand it. But understand, just as those good times didn't last, this shit show isn't going to last either. Things are not always going to be this way. Are they possibly, probably going to get worse? Yep, it's quite likely. But it's not going to stay the same. This isn't how it's going to be forever. It's going to change. It cannot continue. Again, just as those good times and those little bit of times of prosperity and years before and the hope that older generations had has now gone, those times changed, these times will change. And someday, the millennials and the Zoomers, you will be the transitional generations. You will be the ones that maybe, perhaps, just perhaps, that will be telling the generations after you. You will be telling them, enjoy this prosperity that you had. Let me tell you what it was like in the dark days of clown world. Let me tell you how insane it was. They were telling people just to kill themselves. They were constantly telling people they were destroying the planet by breathing out carbon dioxide and other ridiculous nonsense, and people fell for it. You'll be the transitional generation. you might be telling the generations in the future that are talking about how hopeful they are and how good life is. You may be telling them, yeah, well, let me tell you how bad it was back in my day. Wrap up on that note. Like I say, I'm sorry. It should have been more lighthearted. I tried my best. But I hope you got something out of the discussion. I do. I hope you got something out of the discussion. I hope you enjoy your weekend. Hope you'll get a chance to check out all our great content. We put something new up Monday through Friday here on Radio Album. Hope you get a chance to check all that out. I'll be back next Tuesday for the Parish of the Patriots. I'll be here on Monday. Start your week off with another installment of the Daily Nationalist. We got Dr. Johnson's Orthodox Nationalist on Wednesdays. Of course, his Daily Nationalist on Thursday. So there's something to check out Monday through Friday. I hope you'll get a chance to do it. Thank you for joining us. As always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.